Hey y'all, this is Bree Bagwell with your OnlyFans podcast, Breecap. And I want to tell you about how much I absolutely adore my friend Bart Crow, but since I don't have 2 hours, you'll pick it up throughout this podcast. Bart Crow from Maypearl, Texas, Mr. Wear My Ring, is as cool as he sounds and dresses. Seriously, Bart always looks great. Also, shout out to the wifey for some of that, I'm sure. We talk a lot about Bart's new EP, Hey Pretty Thing, which was recorded at Gordy Quist from Band of Heathen Studio called The Finishing School. Sorry, Gordy, that we had a tiny brain lapse there on the name. And the Nick we are referring to here as the EP producer is the one and only Nick J. I love the insight here on recording a full-length album versus an EP. I really wanted to dive into that, and Bart was the perfect person for that conversation and much more, like not traveling with a band trailer or your own sound person. We talk about the old days of touring and how it's okay to play less and make more, even though that's still a giant mind shift for us both. I'm glad that at the end we summarize we are very happy with our careers, but Bart always wants more in his career, just like I do, which is probably why we are such great friends. So don't take it too hard if your record doesn't catapult you into superstar fame. You can still have a long, fantastic career and become best buds with someone that's your hero, like me and Bart. Oh, and if you don't know, like I didn't know, but I pretended to, Bryce Harper is a baseball player for the Phillies. Enjoy.
But I have a lot of downtime. My brain doesn't have a lot of downtime. So I'm like, what are y'all doing in there?
Hey.
Y'all, can I come sit in there? No. Yeah, I can.
At the Smokestack where I made my last record, they had megaphones. They had everything in there. It was incredible. Uh-huh. Paul Moak, it was incredible. But they had all these different megaphones on. That you could, and I was just like, I couldn't help it. Every scratch vocal take, I was using a different megaphone. And of course, the
as you should, that's why they are there.
He's like, please don't do that too close to that $100,000 mic. Or, you know, I was like, oh, I'm not that dumb, but yeah. He had a point.
Or someone. Maybe get your $100,000 mic away from me.
Hey, everybody, this is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends.
I like to do it because sometimes I start talking really nasally.
Awesome.
And I hate it.
Okay.
That's an exaggerated version, but.
No, I've heard you talk like that before.
I know, mostly when I've been drinking. Like, stop talking like that. And I got to stop saying like.
Man.
It's a filler for me.
There's a lot of people that do it.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it okay.
I'm sure I do it or did it, but I'm so OCD. And when I hear other people do it, I'm like, I almost said it.
Well, what do you put
I'm like, don't like, do that.
Don't like,
do sometimes that. Brooke can get to rocking and rolling and about the 10th like. I ruin everything, so I'm like, oh, lug totes, bro, like, for real? Oh, like, oh, my likes.
Yeah.
Like, I hate you. Actually, she didn't say that, but I know she thinks it.
Or I thought about getting some sort of shock collar, and when I do it, Kyle can...
You're setting yourself up for a terrible time.
Well, I need to stop, but... And everyone has their thing. A lot of people do, you know. Steve Trevino, he was going, I go, and I like it. I like that. I'm going to just start using I go.
I think... I was born with my dad's personality, but I fight it daily. So when I pick up on something as somebody's like that, I hate it instantly.
Ah, interesting.
So, just in my head, I don't act upon that hatred, but it's just like, please stop saying that.
I remind myself of my mother constantly. Mom, I got so much of both of them.
Gotcha.
I got a lot of great qualities, though. I mean, I obviously.
Duh. Been telling you that for years.
But thanks. I'm a severe overthinker.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
He knows.
I didn't know that about me either.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't know that's why when you and I can have heavy conversations, there's not. It's like fighting to who gets to talk next. Well, in the best way, like as friends should do.
It's almost exclusively our conversations. I was kind of scrolling up a little bit in our text, and it's like we really, you and I dive right in the deep end of.
And no fluff.
No, we're not. Hey, how are you? I'm great.
You know what I'm noticing now with certain friends of mine, good friends, they'll text me and I'll notice what I sent them last, and I'll go up, and like all my texts are like this big to this big, and they are one sentence people, and I'm kind of
not me, like,
though. Huh? Maybe I'm not gonna just text them anymore till they can at least meet me in the middle.
Yeah, I can't do a one word, one line response.
I've got a friend who is not in music, but he owns a gym, a jiu-jitsu gym, and a school. And we're thinking about sending Poet. He started a school because he's got young kids, and he's very anti-public school.
Okay.
And the school he started, Apogee, is really badass. So we were thinking about Poet going, except the closest one is in Cedar Park. So I shot him this text, you know, hey, we're thinking about sending Poet. There's one in Dripping, halftime/full-time. That was a reply to my...
Okay.
I even told Brooke, she's like, I needed more info. I've got more questions, and now I refuse to write back.
That's amazing, though. Are they going to teach kids to use credit cards and things that are actually applicable, or not to use credit cards is more what I meant?
Don't quote me. Go to the website to check it, but it is predominantly... like reading, math, science, and get out of the classroom.
Love it.
Team building, social building, like life skills.
Life skills.
Hopefully some taxes are in there somewhere.
Let's all
learn taxes. But
knowing
them, they probably are in the high school classes, so.
I love that. My dad's an accountant, and I'm still like, I have $0 at the bottom. It's not hard to do my taxes. Like, what I make, I spend.
That's when I talk to Evan, my accountant. I'm like, if the numbers are red, that's good, right? Like, red's a cool color, right? He's like, no, it doesn't work that way.
Means you don't owe anything, though, which is, well, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I owed sales. I have, like, backed up sales tax. I cannot believe that the way you're supposed to do sales taxes in Texas, and I've been doing it so wrong my whole life, and then... So I called, because my dad's a New Mexico accountant. He doesn't know Texas rules. So I called Zane's mom from Wilder Blue. She's an accountant. I said, do you file your sales taxes like this? And she goes, oh, yeah. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's every county. You have to put what you sold in by zip code on the
Yay,
website.
Evan, hopefully.
Evan, listen. Are you listening to this, Evan? That's what you're supposed to do, is file your sales tax. And it differs between different counties in Texas.
Just, if he's doing it, wonderful. If not, I'll cross that bridge when it gets put in front of me.
Bartholomew Crow, everybody. He's here in the flesh. Do you like my hat?
I love it. That's awesome. I got to get one.
I think it's Ashley's hat.
It's yours now. It's yours today.
Well, I curved it. I don't think she likes it like that, so I'm going to have
to... Girl, you didn't do flat.
Well, I looked stupid.
Tabletop flat.
I know, but I can't do... I don't look good like that.
I have to because my noggin's wide.
Is that why? So I have a very non-wide noggin. That's what's going on. Yeah, definitely. I think it might be my hat. I don't know. I think it's Ashley's hat.
Well, we're in your RV doing your podcast, and it's on your head. So it's kind of...
Looks like it's mine, Ashley.
I think
sorry.
It's yours.
She's not here.
And she's not here, so...
And you played the worst prank on me ever, speaking of Ashley. I don't know whether we should talk about it or not, but...
Of course we should talk about it, because I got you.
No, you got me so hard, because Bart and I have been friends for a long time, but as we've alluded to, we are, like, deep friends. We are... This business is so hard. You need someone who understands and who can talk you through it, but also pep talk you, but also be like, this just sucks. And just sometimes
you came to the right place.
You're empathetic, but you are encouraging.
Try to be.
I thought we were like buddy. I thought we were buddies and buddies and buddies, and we are.
We were. That's why I thought I could say that to you if I was being serious.
I'm still super.
For those at
it.
Home that don't know, so Bree's tour manager Ashley worked for me for a while, and then Bree stole her, and Ashley stabbed me in the back like the Judas that she is. But the best part, well, even before I messed with you, like, Ashley was nervous wreck, and I just told him, like, dude, I don't care. Who am I to tell somebody what to do? Thank you for your time and doing what I asked. And I even told her, because she was really sweet, and we'd become really good friends, and she was, you know, part of the fam before you stole her. And I just told her, I'm like, good for you. Estrogen powers unite. Like, You'd be out here with a bunch of stinky dudes.
She's probably like, can I come back? Have me. Bree's not as nice as she looks in real life.
When I text Bree, friends, I was at Coda watching Pantera, and it was between Lamb of God and Pantera, and went to the concession stand, and I just text Bree. I was like, really? Wow. And then I forgot that I texted you because the show was starting and went back, and I didn't text you. Might have been the next day, even.
I sent you a long text, and I was, oh my gosh, I was devastated. And I said, I'm so sorry. That was never the intention. And she called me out of the blue, and I should, whatever. And you said, oh my gosh, I was at a concert. I just was totally messing with you. But you waited a good 24 hours.
Yes, because when I saw your text, I'm like, oh crap, I forgot. I didn't even read it. I just wrote, haha, I got you. I'm sorry, I was at a concert. I meant to write you back. I'm just messing with you. Then I went back and read it, and I'm like, oh, I should feel bad, but I don't. I feel like I succeeded.
Yeah, you succeeded. That's this crazy biz, too, because I think you and I hire great people. And people know that about us, and they just kind of like pluck from our... Not
I think so.
Often, but...
I never imagined it being this way, but I think of all the players that I've lost to bands who've went on to larger venues and success. I'm like, shit, why don't somebody hire a mediocre singer? Because I am for sale.
But I want to go to those venues and
play. I do, too.
Wait, it's like, what about me, though?
But not out front. I don't really want to buy a ticket and go.
No.
Kind of want to, like, be invited and...
I just want to go and be like, oh, sold out again.
Listen to
Can
my
you
great
believe it?
Music.
It just sold out again?
Yeah. God, this is getting old. I miss when no one was there.
There's so many people. It is frustrating. I told Paul, I've been caring less a little bit lately. And just sometimes it seems as if the people that care way less and are like, well, I don't know, I'm not going to work today, I'm going to go drink, I don't care, they seem to have more success easily or quicker.
Man, I don't know. Yeah, I've given up trying to figure out what people want.
Yeah.
And I'm so weird, like I quit trying to figure that out and then appreciate when I see bands that are doing really well the diversity, like from, you know, pyros and rockin' show to very chilled country music. And I'm like, oh, I love that for the grander scheme. But I kind of got to where I made peace to where everything is for me. And that's when things got calm in my life.
I love that.
And social media doesn't not help at all. You know, and it's not envy or jealousy, it's just, and it's not admiration, it's not that big of a, oh wow, it's kind of like, oh, that's cool, I wish I was on that level too, but you know what, this is where God's got me, and things aren't so bad.
Yeah, we're doing great.
And so, I'm like, okay, and when I kind of, and I just think that's a natural evolution, it doesn't matter what you're doing, baseball player. Damn, I'm in AAA. I sure want to get to the bigs. Oh, my best friend just got to the big. I'm so happy for him, but damn it, I want to go too. Or fill in the blank of whatever it is in life. And I just, and believe me, I say that now in 2025, but there was probably 8 to 10 years of just like MFing everything and just spinning your wheels and working hard and trying to, you know, be a good person and a good husband and a good father and a good band leader and a good songwriter and a good entertainer. And when you feel like you're clicking everything, but you still feel behind the eight ball, it's like, fuck it all.
Right.
But then it's like, well, that's probably not a good approach either.
Because you are, you know, you are legendary status and people would kill
Can
to
you
do
say that louder
you
and again?
Legendary status, sir.
Dude, I'm going to edit that and hold
do
that
it.
Piece and repeat it to myself every
it's
day.
It's going
to
be your new alarm clock. Wake up, Barkro. You're a legendary status. Go get them, Tiger. But
awesome.
And a lot of people would kill, girls especially would kill to do what I'm doing. And I went to Columbus, but I think it's the thing of... Whenever I just was in Columbus and there was 45 tickets sold, which I was thrilled.
Right on.
I've never played in Ohio. what am I doing there?
It's a long ways from home.
Long ways from home. Everyone was so nice. And then there was just that one guy that was like, oh, I can't believe there's not more people here. Like, there should be more people. And they mean it in a nice way. And it's like, dude, I've been trying to get outside of my radius for a long time. It's a big deal for me to be outside of Texas in general. Right. And I think it's just because we're constantly reminded that you're not George Strait and I'm not Lena Wilson. That reminder. And it's like, but no, we're doing wonderful things. We're making a living where you provide for your family, which I have no idea how you have children.
I don't either. Well, I can tell you how.
Your wife is how we've really
kept them,
hot.
I don't know how we've kept them alive and made them decent members of society or youth society at this point.
They're so cute.
Thank you. Really, on parenthood, it's like, well, we don't have a choice at this point. So we just have to do it and figure it out. For instance, today's day 18 in a row that we will be at a baseball field.
Oh.
And we have 11 more to go before there's a day not going to the baseball field.
Wait, what? How is that possible? They all play on different days?
Yes. So Towns plays select club ball. So he has practices two nights a week in North Austin, which I got to put on oxygen tank because I usually don't go that high. And then Poets playing T-ball. The Twins are playing rec ball, but they're on separate teams for the first time. One's playing majors, one's playing AAA. And then one of the Twins is also playing select ball.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's just...
And all the same, all baseball, though.
All baseball. Well, I mean, there's other stuff. Like, River just wrapped the theater production. Poet and River in jiu-jitsu. Great. Towns just finished basketball. Played football also.
That is so many things. That's... its own calendar.
And he's about to be a freshman in high school.
That's
like,
wild.
What? And the Twins will be in junior high next year. So I'm like, well, Towns will be driving in a couple years.
Now you get to buy a car.
Oh, no. I got a Bronco that's paid for. That's what he'll be real. It's at the shop getting new mirrors put on it and a new door because the hinges were broken. But it's a 1980 Ford Bronco.
Okay. That's a dream for a
it's pretty
high school
dope.
Child.
It's, oh, yes. Absolutely. And it's a tank. So I got... that, and I've upgraded a bunch of, like, I put new seat belts in it, new brake system, new engine. So
he's gonna make out with some girls in that car,
my man.
Is that your Sprinter back there still?
Yep,
still going strong. You have better Sprinter luck than I do. Or do you not?
Well, better luck than you, yes, just because I know your story. But man, I bought my first one in 16. And it was just a big old tank, but I didn't have any problems with it. But it once I got about 275,000 miles, just that back of the head, like, man, I don't want to start another payment.
I know.
But this is getting really high up there. And I had to get some work done, and they brought me that one to swap out and loan it to me. And mine was the dually with the extended chassis, pulling a trailer. It had bunks in it and stuff. And this one's just like a family vehicle. It's got a nice entertainment center and bench seats. So ripped out the back bench and all our gear fit in it. And we took it to New Mexico for that first weekend. That thing got 21 miles a gallon and only 40,000 miles on it. So I called them back. I'm like, I'm sold. Don't even bring the silver one back.
That is so smart. I think a lot of people come out of the gate with the van trailer thing. And it's so easy to raise the money for your first, I feel like for your first project. Or your parents are like, we're going to help you get a van and trailer. And then and then when you get in it 10 years, it's like, oh, I should have saved that money. And you can put it on the van, especially if you can run your ears wireless or run just use the monitors. We use the house sound guy every night. I think people think that we don't do that, but
I do. I've used house sound since 18.
Yeah.
Well, because I went down the road of what a lot of bands do, this scene or other scenes. But, you know, Dandelion came out and put us... like felt the career shift forward. The van that I had at that time needed a whole new front end and a couple other things. So my father-in-law and I went in partners and bought a bus and then rolled with the bus for 3 years, which would have been fine, but just blinders on, like, oh, finally, you know. And I had 4 back surgeries riding in a van, and so it was just kind of a graduation thing. Next thing you know, I've got 5-piece band, merch, tour manager, monitor engineer, front of house engineer, and a driver. And rock, let's go. And then it works till it doesn't. And then it's like throwing the barrels overboard. And first thing that went was the trailer, which we just dumped it, but we started putting gear in the bays. That saved, you know, not a ton, but it saved fuel mileage.
And some disasters.
And yeah, and so it slowly started downgrading to the point where I was like, okay, for where I am now, I have to make a business decision, and this thing is way too expensive. Could it make it work? Yeah. Could we keep digging a hole? Yes. Yeah. But I think as far as like, even if you get into that silly game of perception, I might have been the only one buying that ticket. So about my second year of being the only one that came home out of 12 people not having any money in his pocket, it was like, okay, no more bus.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, too, that my whole career I had a merch person and a tour manager, which it is two jobs, but right now Ashley's doing both, and I'm doing a lot more acoustic stuff where she... It's just her and I and this, and she sells merch and helps me drive. And it's, I remember guaranteeing my band 12 full band shows a month forever. That's just how it was. But that's just how it was at the time. And I had no problem getting 12. It was like we were just always
same
playing.
Thing. I never had a like set number of shows, but years, like you're saying, for years. 10 shows was on the low side of a month.
I know.
Easily.
That's so crazy to think about.
And I think back of when we played 18 times. I think I've maxed out this year. I've had 1 month, I had 3 whole shows. I'm like, I used to do 18 shows a month. Like, just what we did. It was clockwork. The very first time I ever took a weekend off once the ball got rolling.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
So I think started playing in 03, put a band together in 04, so probably mid-04 to maybe, let's say, first of 05. From then, the first time I took a weekend off was in 2008, and I had my first back surgery. Or no, 2010. And I took 2 weeks off when I was supposed to take a month off. And then I had a buddy as a pilot would fly me to shows because I just couldn't ride anywhere. And it was quicker. Even though it hurt a little bit on my back, but it was quicker to get where we were going. And then it was back to it. When Towns was born, I took 1 weekend off. Then I had a second back surgery. I took 3 weeks off. And every time I would come back, I say back surgery. I had two lower back. But there's pictures. Looked like such a dumbass. But I'm on stage on a stool with a neck brace. I'm 2 weeks out
of
having surgery. Or playing shows standing with a full back brace on. You know, now, when I had my major back surgery, I did take the 4 or 5 weeks off. But my first show back was the Texas Mardi Gras.
I was there.
That evidently whoever books it absolutely forgot that I still play music. And when I got off stage, I had the brace on. My doctor was actually there because his son went to TCU, I think. And so they were up there at the show. And he was like, "You're my first patient that I've ever seen. You're really wearing the back brace, but you're on stage playing music." And I'm like, "You said wear the back brace."
I wore it.
I'm doing the back brace.
He's like, "I meant horizontal." Like, so, that's wild. I think Macy was at that show with you.
Or, I think
she sang with you that night.
I think so. Did you want to fight her? Because you know you're the Macy now.
I did not want to fight her, but I ended up riding with her some in Nashville not too long after that. But yeah, she's great. But I tried, you know, I try my best. But I do love our duet moments.
I do too.
They are very fun.
We got one coming up.
We do have one. When
is it? River Fest?
Oh, River Fest. Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Duh! Come on.
Duh! Oh, I know it already. Sometimes I like to just brush up on it to make sure I know it, but I think I
me
know.
Me too.
Each chorus changes words. The one part, the words are always different, so I just gotta make sure I don't mess it up.
Yeah, just
maybe I should
do what you
up.
Feel.
It's our viral moment.
But yeah, you know, and like I said, I never was like, "Hey guys, I guarantee you this," no. But I went the route where it was like, "I guarantee you X dollars per show." I might have done, like, you know, at least 10 shows, and everything over that, we, you know, nothing changes, but I'll do my best. And then when the twins were born, I was home for 11 days. Excuse me. And 1 week I had the flu, so I was, and my bus lived in my driveway, so I was quarantined to that. So mother-in-law stayed and helped Brooke with that. Then I was in a week, and then I was gone for 36 days.
Oh no! Like right out of the gate.
Yes.
And you're
but
still married.
But we didn't know any better. Like she didn't know any better. Right, I didn't know any better. This is what we did. And then finally, just I think last year was the biggest year to really gear back. I mean, it's been slowly creeping, but you know, everybody. I say everybody. I don't talk to anyone. Not on purpose, aside from you. And you are someone, not...
No.
So, but I've always heard, oh, the goal is to get to the George Strait touring. Play less, make more. Play less. And last year was the first year where we geared back, way back, and it was terrifying. But it worked. And then this year, like, this is my first March and April since 2004 to just have like one or two shows. I'm like, okay, I understand January and February is slow, but what's going on? And you know, Shelby, my agent's just like, just we got to stick to our plan, just trust her. And she's really smart, and it worked last year, and I know it, and it's working this year. It's just when I get too much home time, it's kind of like, hey, does anybody remember me?
I know, and we're doing the same thing. I just went out on this big 2.5 week thing, and then I pump the brakes kind of, and then we're being very selective what we take in Texas and playing way less
right
in Texas. And it's, and I agree, it's working. But one night Paul said, why don't you just come to my show with me, or my shows with me? And my first response just immediately was, well, people are gonna think I'm not doing anything if I can just come to shows with you all the time. Like they're gonna be like, what's Bree doing now? She's
I thought
just
you were gonna
nothing.
Be like, what's it pay, Paul?
Yeah, right. I should have said that. But I'm still in the mindset where people aren't going to think I'm successful. But it's, if you're playing.
But it, hey, Bart, it's in your head. Nobody's thinking that.
I know.
Is the reality.
And I'd rather be doing nothing than playing a honky tonk where no one cares and it's not worth my.
Yeah, and I don't.
Back.
And I hope this conversation is coming off like negative Nelly, because it's a blessed opportunity. But just like anything, it's relative to you, it's relative to me, that there's some bumps and there's some. Damn it moments. There's a lot of wonderful moments. Mm-hmm. And so because I was the same way. Like, man, if we're not out there in the fight, in the thick of it, we just get left behind. And the reality that I'm learning still is that nobody cares about that piddly shit except me.
Right.
Except you. And I'm sure each artist and each songwriter and friend we have has the same worries and stuff. I mean, I've read, I wouldn't know by experience, but I've read a few books where, you know, bands blow up from Guns N' Roses to Motley Crue, and then the worry is like, when's this end? Oh, Jesus, when's this going to end?
Right.
Oh, my God, it could end any moment. So I think anybody that cares about themselves, their art, and their job probably has a little bit of that. I mean, my dad was a ninth grade dropout and started his own business in the 80s, and I'm sure there were bazillions of times he was like, shit, man, we are close to the edge.
Yeah, I mean, I talked the same thing, big, giant, you know, when is the next record that comes out that flops, like, after they've been at the top of the charts forever, and that's
right.
A terrifying anxiety to have. I think that I just was used to the grind being the way to the top, and it's not necessarily the way anymore, and that's a total retraining your brain
right.
moment, but I love being home, and we're about to have a new house that we like to be in, and I like who's in that house, so that's also a big thing for me, is if I could make more and travel less, I would like to do that.
I think that's, I mean, even now, like, Shelby make fun of me, I don't say no to anything. I just never have. And if I do, my mind instantly goes like, well, that's one I'll never get back.
Right.
Kind of deal. But it's, I think the reality is that's just not true. I mean, we should be worried. I'm not just in cruise control. I'm just home a lot, and I'm probably annoying the shit out of my entire family.
No, you're putting together a trash can.
I was.
You told me.
Yes, I was putting together a trash can. And I got it, and I just, right before I walked out, I'm like, hey, babe, you want the pro or the con? She's like, just tell me. I'm like, new trash can slide system? Perfect. Watch this. Pushed it, and then it catches and slowly retracts. Mm. She's like, right, con. I'm like, well, see how there's no cabinet door on it? I didn't get the one that attaches to the door to slide out. So... I'm probably going to have to take all this apart after this podcast.
Can you just spray glue and stick?
Just get a piece of cardboard and paint it that looks like a cabinet door and just stick it over it.
Absolutely. Paul and I installed, Paul and his uncle really installed all of our cabinets in the new house. And it was like and then we put the fridge in and it was, the fridge wouldn't open, like it was half an inch, and they had to take them all. And those kinds of things are, it's not the work that bothers me as much as the redoing of the thing that you've already done. That drives me insane. And that's a lot of, we put the wallpaper up and it was beautiful. We came back the next day, it was bubbling, and so we had to take it down and do it again. Then I was mad. I don't mind a first round home improvement. I mind a second, and I really mind a third round.
Dude, I am the world's worst about, I am the five trips to Home Depot guy. And what stinks is I grew up a drywaller's son. I grew up in construction. I worked for home builders. I used to weld. I used to do all the building and creating stuff. And now I'm living in the city. And, you know, I've got plenty of tools, but I always don't have one I need. And right. I'm just like, I think in my laziness and hating going to Home Depot more than once for one project, it's like, well, how much would it cost to somebody that knows what they're doing, that has a tool truck, that can knock this out in an hour?
Yeah.
Convenience might be worth paying for.
I know. Or we were wallpapering, we were on a roll, we had one day, and we ran out of glue. And it was like, we were like, screw this, we're going to happy hour. Like, that was it. Like,
yeah.
That will ruin a day
clocking
for me
out.
If I have to go back to Home Depot for something. Like, we were just there.
I know.
I can't ever find anything. Like, I don't know if it's me.
And I always have to pee when I go to Home Depot.
I always have to pee.
And it doesn't matter where you park. You're going to walk from one wall to the other.
And then you buy a plant and it's $27 and you didn't know. That was just me? Okay. How's your EP release going? Because it's flying by already. Is your you just came out with an EP?
Yeah, sorry. Back to music.
No. This podcast really has nothing that it's about. What's it about? I don't know.
Okay. Well,
but I am proud of you for, I'm about to do one myself, and it just, I get excited because an EP seems a little bit more manageable for me than an LP, and I did 5 songs, and I'm just excited about it. It feels a little bit less daunting to me.
That's how it's been for me. I started the EP thing after, so we did Dandelion, and then we did the Parade record, mm-hmm. and that didn't
that
go so hot.
15.
And it didn't. It just wasn't received that well.
Parade wasn't.
That's a lie. Not as like a. I don't know.
Dear Music was.
I got
that
some
one,
bank
right?
statements to show you that. Like, but I don't know. That was a rough record to make. Some of the people I had on it were going through some personal situations, and I think that was kind of bleeding into the mojo. And I'm not throwing them under the bus, trying to blame anybody for a product that I put out that wasn't as successful as Dandelion. But just in hindsight, trying to figure out like what went good on one versus not the other. And there were some things like that. And then when it wasn't doing so hot, then I started hating the record. And I'm sure that like just the aura and vibe I was putting out and starting to dislike it probably manifested it, even if it was just in my head, that this is tanking. And when I do just slow down and look at the numbers of what it cost to make it, and then that one I had, did all the big kid things, had a publicist, had a, forget her title, but basically like, not a business manager, but like had a business plan for this product.
Oh, right.
And so kind of just did everything hoping that was going to be
like
a catapult.
Project manager or something.
And so when it didn't come to fruition, it was just kind of like, oh, now what? And then I just kind of, it kind of tainted my brain. It's like, man, I put 10, 12, whatever, however many songs on it. It's like, well, if the record as an entity didn't do that great and people weren't loving it, there might be some songs they missed on it. So what if I just give 5 songs, which, and not going to, downplay this. Well, now I'm talking about a fraction of the studio cost and musician cost and mastering cost and mixing cost.
Yeah.
And then I'm not putting all my eggs in one basket. If this does great, oh, wonderful. It buys me time where I can be writing and do it again. Or like what I did, I've always released records every 2 years, and after Parade kind of pooped a little, in just for lack of better terms, I think it was 3 or 3.5 years, so I was able to write, and I wasn't writing much. I did 18 months. I didn't write anything. I was pissed.
Howdy, y'all. It's Bree Bagwell, and I know y'all support the people who support me, so let me tell you about Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Born and raised in Deep Ellum, Texas, Deep Ellum Brewing Company has really made its mark on the beer world. Known for its flagships, Dallas Blonde and Deep Ellum IPA, they put boring beers to shame with a full lineup that's unapologetically not brewed to style. My personal favorite is the Dallas Blonde. It is so easy to drink. I just took it home for the holidays, and my whole family was like obsessed with this beer. No joke. They drank it all. Thanks a lot, family. So head over to deepellumbrewing.com to open the beer vault and give your fridge what it deserves. And you'll see why love runs deep for Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Available in Texas and Oklahoma, side effects may include severe happiness. Deep Ellum Brewing Company products are for individuals 21 and older, and we encourage drinking responsibly. Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brie and Whiskey sent you.
Yeah, that'll
I hated
do it
everything.
Yeah.
And I was a wet blanket, dude. I was just drinking every day so I wouldn't think about how shitty things had turned. Messing with pills, just numbing out for a long time. And but no one knew. I mean, I'm sure Brooke knew because she's actually the most intelligent person I know. Plus, she's my wife. She knows every characteristic when something's off. But I was just secretly just like, fuck all this. If I'm numb, I'm not thinking about it. But then I started writing again and went and made an EP. I had maybe 7 or 8 songs. And we cut 7 or 8 songs, but only used 5.
Okay.
So then I had some songs left over. So I was kind of like, all right, I'm going to make a cachet of songs. And that way, maybe I'll stack enough where I don't have to come into the studio. I can just call the producer and be like, hey, song X, Y, and Z, shoot me that. We're going to mix it, master it. And so I did that. Even though I didn't ever do, I had the cachet songs, but it never worked out that way where it was just like, oh, now I'm going to pull from this library and just build an EP of already done songs. But I was able to still have those songs roll over into the next session in case the 5 we went and did weren't the 5 at the end. Like, oh, that didn't come out how I'd envisioned or how I'd hoped. And so, but hey, we got these. Let's revisit these. Excuse me. So I did that for 3 songs. I mean, 3 records, 3 EPs.
That's so smart.
And I want to make a full record now, but I still have that fear of, especially even more so now, where no one's buying physical copies, everything's streamed, and you can pick and choose what you want. So now it's like, well, for an independent artist as myself, is it smart to just for this conversation, say I have 10 songs ready to go? Would it be smarter to go in the studio every 2 months and cut 2 or 3 and then just release singles? Or would it be smart to go in and just cut a record, which is what I want to do, but I haven't allowed myself to be proven why that would be the best in my best interest. And it does come back to finances, you know, going to make a 40,000 plus product or go in and make a $15,000 product, and let's do the 15,000 and hopefully that does well. And hey, I already got the songs, let's go do another 15,000 now for 30. I've got 2 projects out, 2, like we talked about on the cruise, 2 media pushes and 2 big things happening versus here's this one record that I've spent all my savings on. Mother of God, please like it.
Right.
And if you don't, which is what happened with the Parade, shit.
I'm going to emotionally crash. And that's what I had, like, severe album hangover after my 2022 record. That's what I've been calling it because I really thought this whole thing is going to change my life. Like, this record's going to change my life.
But on the positive, that's what it's supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to do. Because you don't go in and make it. I'm saying you specifically, you and myself and most people. You don't go in like, well, I hope this is good.
You put your blood, sweat,
I'm
and tears
in this.
And, yeah, I see.
And
I
then
see.
When it doesn't, yeah, it hurts.
Yeah.
A little
And
deeper.
It might have moved the needle appropriately or whatever, but I thought it was going to be... So I guess my perception of the music business is, at this point, an EP has the same chance of hitting as a full-length record has the chance of hitting, as the same chance a random TikTok video has the same chance of hitting. So if I can make one for less than half the cost, then that's probably what I'm going to do, which is what I'm doing.
And it's exactly what I was trying to say, but my Virgo brain wouldn't wrap it up that quick.
No,
but
you were doing a
great
job. It makes a lot of sense. I haven't ever thought about it.
Well, and because even when I released this last one, Hey Pretty Thing, not a lot, and they were really nice. Like, hey, when are we going to get a full length? And in my head, I'm like, well, when I have 50 grand to just like hang out the window, I'll do that. But I was like, oh, you know, we're still working on things, but content. I mean, we live in such a flash of the pan society here today, gone tomorrow, as far as a song or a movie or a saying or
right.
These damn words my kids come home using. I'm like, they're here today, gone tomorrow. And not that the bands are, but the products seem to flash the pan. And then if something sticks, well, now we got Apple Music, Pandora, well, Spotify. You know, right. You everything you have at your fingertips. So I'm with you. I think if I would hate to do another here's 12 songs and I bled and deeply thought and worked with wonderful people on all 12 of them. Mm-hmm. Oh, you only like one. Well, shit.
Or you
what happens to the rest of those?
Yeah, or I ran out of promotion money for singles for the record, and so then I didn't push. I pushed 3 to radio, and there's 12 songs or whatever. Same. I thought I was going to push 6, but that's
it's like managers
$30,000.
Yes, it's like managers when they see. Because I went through this back when we were, you know, hot rodding around on the bus and having a merchandise person. You know, I've only had a couple managers, but some managers that I even knew as friends. We're like, way too much gear over there at merch. You too many options. People will walk away, and if you have 4 or 5, it limits the like, oh, I don't any meeny money. Oh, you know what? I don't know. I'll be back. Versus like, hey, I've got A and B. So then I kind of was like, well, shouldn't that work with the other product as well? Because take a song, you do 12 songs on a record. One, you just ran out of money to push the single, but you know your friends, people, you've seen the stream numbers. Like, there's something on that. I should work it, but I just can't. But if that song was waited for the next record, and now you got a smaller thing to have to juggle.
It might have had a better chance at living.
Or maybe you see it, and nobody else has got to, like, fall in love with it yet. Because it's down the track, even the tracking list. Like, maybe it's too far down.
Right.
I heard the songs I wanted to hear. I've heard enough. I'm going to go to the next. I like this other record. And it's like, oh, y'all missed that one. I really still feel strong about that. But if you put it back on something else.
Totally. I love that idea. Well, I'm hoping that goes.
And please, anybody, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Like, do not take any of this as
whatever.
This is, oh man, that's how you'd get it in the music. No.
But I mean, it's a great thing, because what if you were coming here saying, no, you need to do full length records for 40 grand plus promotion,
right?
You know, I'd like, that feels so scary and unattainable at this point in the music business. It's so wild that we did that. But then I remember my very first CD. Just the iTunes sales on that first week. It was my first record. I was nobody, and I remember like getting onto my whatever it was, and it was 3 grand in the bank, because people were buying, their only option was to buy the whole record for $12.99. So you don't even have to have that much to sell. So now it's just,
and then you the consumer, you're invested. So I'm going to listen to all this.
I paid $13 for
you're
this.
Back like when I was a kid, and I'm sure several people did it even in CD world, but you're opening the cassette and you're reading all the liner notes. My first 2 or 3 records had more liner notes and more thank yous. If I passed you, if I shook your hand at a gig, you're in the liner notes.
Was I in your liner? I'm going to have to go back and look.
I don't know if we knew each other.
I'm just kidding. We didn't. What? Wait, but Paul.
You're in the liner notes of my heart.
Oh, you should write a song. Ray Bagwell's in the liner notes of my heart. But Paul wanted to know who he loves. The guitar tone on the last. Like, the guitars on that EP sound really, really good. Like, where did you do that, and who did those guitars?
I do. Just tell Paul that. To everyone else out there, Jacob Hildebrand.
Oh.
And we did it at, Gordy. Gordy Quist Studio.
Right.
It's only EP. So that was my third EP with Nick J producing. But it was our first one to do it at Gordy Studio. And I'm so sorry. I should know the name of that studio.
I should too.
For me, it was just an address and going to see my boys.
I know it too. Well, I'll put it in the recap, but I love Gordy.
Please do,
I love
because
everything Gordy's doing.
Yes, and that studio needs some love, or needs a shout out.
I
because
will do that at the top
they,
of the.
They it put out a great EP for me, and Courtney did her record there,
right,
with Nick, and great.
Yeah, that was a great record too.
And so, but yeah, Jacob's he's a stud. He's played on the last couple.
He's real good, but that guitar tone to impress Paul Eason. That's
and I'm sure Jacob's like, oh, please don't call me for barks. I'm like, man, how'd you do that? What's this button do? Yeah. Like, that's me in the studio because I'm just playing rhythm for scratches, and then they'll recut, and I'll play rhythm once we recut it. But I have a lot of downtime. My brain doesn't have a lot of downtime. So I'm like, what are y'all doing in there?
Hey.
Y'all, can I come sit in there? No. Yeah, I can.
At the Smokestack where I made my last record, they had megaphones. They had everything in there. It was incredible.
Uh-huh.
Paul Moak. It was incredible. But they had all these different megaphones on, so that you could, and I was just like, I couldn't help it. Every scratch vocal take, I was using a different megaphone. And of course, the
as you should.
Engineer,
that's why they are there.
He's like, please don't do that too close to that $100,000 mic. Or, you know, I was like, oh, I'm not that dumb. But he had a point.
Or someone. Maybe get your $100,000 mic away from me. Because you shouldn't be doing that.
Don't put the megaphones in the $100,000 mic room. Like, that makes no sense.
And don't
at
put
all.
Me in the room with the $100,000 mic.
Right.
That's your first mistake.
For my scratch vocals.
Yes.
I don't know. I think they were impressing. Paul knows a lot about mics. And I agreed. I don't need anything more than. I actually, it's very funny because I do my vocals on a Shure. Like some, like, pretty inexpensive.
I can't tell you what I cut them on because Nick has got just a plethora of amazing mics. And I loved working with him, like, because we hit it off as bros. And when I went to him, and he was my first one after the parade, I was like, just let me sing how I sing. Now, I'll stay there all day, get the best take, of course. But because on parade, you know, it by the end, it was like punching words, punching three-line sentences. It was just a ass whip.
Yeah, I've had producers really take a lot of the character out of my voice, and even if it may be overall better for the listener, what good does that do if I can't stand it?
Yeah, because I'm not like dogging anybody. I absolutely love the dudes I did Dandelion and Parade with, but by the end of Parade, it was just, I think, in hindsight, of course, not at the moment. It's a moment. It's like, okay, you want me to stand on my head?
Yeah.
I got you, bro.
I'll try anything.
Yes, because Justin Pollard produced it. We were bros. And
he's a great producer.
Did a fantastic job on Dan. Did a fantastic job on the parade. Like, I listen to the parade now, and I'm like, man, everybody else on the planet's wrong. This record's good.
Joe Fink today from Hand Drawn Records told me that that's his favorite record.
Oh.
Parade.
Well,
so,
thanks, Joseph.
But I don't know if he's wanting you to print your vinyls there. I'm just kidding. He really, well, he's a fan of music.
Of course, but I'm going to print through Joe anyway.
Right,
so
right, yeah. It's very funny.
But I think if we were all to sit around and have a beer and bullshit, it was like, yeah, it was kind of getting wonky there towards the end, and it was a lot of nitpicky, maybe irrelevant things, but I mean, the record, for the greater good of the record, whatever you want me to do. But I did learn from that. Like, I didn't have fun there by the end. It just got too monotonous for me. And look, the fact of the matter, the reality is, for myself, and I'm going to say you as well, and countless other bands, we're touring bands. We're not studio players. I go in the studio every 2 years. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm doing what I'm told, and I'll do the best job that I can. But I don't know how to work a studio room. I know how to work a stage and live and playing with a band. But going there and, you know, all I know is what, you know, I went to a vocal coach to learn how to really warm up and be studio prepared and, you know, be ready to do my part. But I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Let's get in here and get out. So I can go back touring.
And let's have fun. If it's not fun, I'm out. Like, that's a lot of what I'm doing now with my band, with the people I work with, with, it's like, if I'm not having fun, this is such a hard business. I am not going to do it. And it's kind of, I mean, Rachel Loy and I have really hit our stride. That first record, we were getting used to each other, and it was the vocals were hard, and I called Will Clark Grink, and I was like, hey, when you recorded with Rachel, and he goes, you feel like a terrible singer, and I was like, yes. And then he told Rachel, because he's Will, little brat, and she gave me a trophy for recording vocals with her. It was really cute.
Awesome.
But she said, I didn't even know I was being hard on you because you had such a good attitude about it. And I was like, well, because I want it to be the best that it can be. But it was tedious for me, but I'm a very patient person. And I want it to be good. But now we've kind of really relaxed. But I think I'm also a better singer because she was hard on me.
Yeah,
I don't know. But she's, yeah, we've really hit our stride. I'm not saying recording with her is anything but delightful, because I'm still making my projects.
Well, that
her.
Was
she's
me with Justin and Michael Ramos and T-Bay and Brad Danner. Like, we had fun. It was just... And maybe it called to be that
T-Bay,
tedious.
Let's be honest.
Man, you'd be surprised. Mine and T-Bay's friend. Like, so many people.
I love him.
Are like, how are you and T-Bay buds? I'm like, we're bros, man. Like, we have never had one time. And it was me, like, shut him down real hard. And from then on, man. But he was not even being T-Bay. He was just sort of being T-Bay. But... we're buds, man. We text all the time now. And
I love, like, him, too.
I love him, too. Pollard told me when I met him, he goes, either love him or you hate him. And if you hate him, you don't know him.
Aw.
So even now I'm like, oh, T-Bay, there's so many people that don't know you. That's my nice way to put it. But yeah, funny. I mean, it was fun. And the people that I got to play with and all the records I made, I just have been so beyond the musicianship that I am, that I just envy all of them. But again, it just got so tedious and monotonous, and like, man, this isn't fun coming out here and punching words. But maybe that's what needed to happen, and that's okay. But I was just kind of, after that, like, I don't want to do that again. Whether that was right or wrong, that wasn't fun for me. So when I went to Nick, I said, just let me sing how I sing.
Yeah.
Now,
you can move it around.
Obviously,
you can melodyne it a little bit.
Make me do the best, but if I'm singing, I sing how I sing, and I don't want to punch words, and I'll spend the night here, and we can go through the night and in the next day. But so I'll do as many takes as you want, but I just let me be me.
I love that, and I love Rachel. My favorite thing about recording with Rachel is she says, like, she doesn't care if it's perfect as long as she wants my best performance. So there is one take in particular I remember. I was a little flat, but I was so emotional that she's not the kind of producer that makes me do it 1,000 times until I hit the performance and the pitch perfectly. Like, we can fix tiny things if I have a good performance, and I love that because I'm tired. We are on the road all the time. Like, I don't have, and we've also been singing live for decades. That's, our voices are not like spring chickens anymore either. And then I got to go out on the road this weekend with a burnt out voice.
And
like,
then you
can't do that.
Then you put headphones on in front of the $100,000 mic, and it's like every nuance, like, ooh.
Yeah.
Who said that?
Oh boy.
So it's,
I need to,
that's
quit.
Why that's that, and that goes back to, like, we're not studio people. Yeah. I'm not Randy Newman. I'm not cutting, 2,000 songs for in a studio. I've done 9 or 10 records, so 10, 20, that's, maybe 100 songs that I've recorded in a studio. So I'm not studio savvy, but I will do whatever you ask me to. And that's another thing that I'll get mad at myself in retrospect about, is because you're the producer. I'm hiring you because I've heard your stuff. Good vibe. Let's go. You're the boss. I'm just another employee, and I'll do anything. And sometimes I've kicked myself in the rear for not speaking up. Not many times, but there are a few things. And then when I listen to those records now, I'm like, oh, here comes that one part that I just wish I would have said something.
I would have fought for this. I wish I would have fought for
that. And it's not necessarily mine was better. It almost is just like, but I'm kind of the boss. And that's what I wanted. Mm. It's like,
it has to be a balance, and that's not... I know that you found that, and I found that now, and it's so nice, where I can speak up if I want to, but I trust her instincts, but she also trusts mine.
Well, and then I've worked with people where I would speak up, and then I'd be talked out of my opinion.
I know.
And because I'm like, well, shit, you're the producer, you know more than me, and I came to you, so what good does it mean do me to come to you for your guidance, assistance, and taking my art and making it the end result that I want it to be? I've chosen you to do that, so if I'm going to fight you all the way, then I don't need you, or I shouldn't hire you. So I was always like really good about giving you full rein to teach me and show me. And then after, you know, years of doing that, I'm like, okay, I do have something to say, even if it's just stylistically. And then when Nick and I started working together, we were such good friends and known each other for so long. And I discussed these things with him far before we ever, you know, punched the time clock. And that's how we made three EPs. A lot of fun, a lot of cutting up, a lot of bullshitting, and a lot of hard work. Or as hard as a studio work. Right. Long hours.
Yeah, long hours.
Long hours, and a lot of repeating songs and choruses. And, you know, the most we would do was, if he was missing something, we would still take it verse or chorus. There were no word punches.
I love that. Let's do this whole line, yeah. I love that. Okay, we're out of time already, but we passed out of time, but I didn't... I was going to do this
earlier. This is the second podcast, so part two.
Part two. Well, I was going to say I was like, what a lovely segue, because you said cruise control. I was like, we can just talk about the cruise... Now, we must talk about it. I love them. We've gotten to, it's like the only time me and you get to hang out is when we go on the cruise. We're talking about the Texas Country Music Cruise.
But you're not going this fall.
Well, who did I send in my place last year? Sarah Hobbs and Peyton Howie. I know, but weren't they amazing?
Love them both.
I know.
But well, you're sidestepping my point.
I'm ready to go back. The only reason I didn't go is because I did two in 1 year.
Gotcha.
Because I went with Wilder Blue in the spring, and then I went in the fall. So I did two cruises in a year is a lot.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I love Cynthia, Eric, Hunter, and all the other countless people who make that thing function. And it's a wonderful time. It's a cool event.
It's a great boat.
And it's very cool to be a part of it. Now, let's just say it was just not the people we love, and it was just a cruise. I would think two cruises a year would be much for old Bartman.
Right.
Because
the thing about this thing is it's all of our best friends.
Yes, and it's interesting for me personally, because first year I went just the band. Second year I think we did the band. Third year Brooke went with me, and it was cooler because I actually got off the boat. Because my theory the first 2 years, like, well, if half the boat's leaving, I'm gonna have better service. And so I just sat by the pool all day. I never got off the boat at the ports. And I would just stay there and day drink, even read a book.
I know.
Have you ever heard of books? Like, there are these weird things that you hold in your hand and there's words. I was upset it didn't have a lot of pictures in it, but I still read a couple books.
You read a book.
My whole theory was I would sit there and read and drink until the lines started kind of crisscrossing. I'm like, yep, enough drinking. I'm going to take a nap.
Perfect.
Yes.
That sounds like a great day, and we don't get to do things like that. Like, the cruise is a thing that makes us kind of relax, and we went to the beach that day.
Yes.
I don't remember where that was.
Jamaica. I have an interesting photo of myself in Jamaican culture.
Because they had a tour of the weed farm there.
Yeah, well, not where we were on the beach, but it's like the mobile weed farm walked right past us, and I'm like... Hey, man, I'm just here for the culture.
Yeah. I threw a bucket of ice on you. I was having a great day.
Oh, yes.
Why did I do that? I remember just being like,
I was just so hot.
I'm going to go throw
this
bucket of ice on Bart Crow. And I did. Yes. I'm super sorry. And Brooke was there, and she
No, she wasn't. She's like,
sucker. Me.
I'm sure she did. I'm
and then this
positive
guy,
of it.
This guy's like, Brie Bagwell's in a bikini, and he's doing this kind of selfie video. And you go, hey, man, don't do that.
Did I?
Yes.
I'm such a night.
And I was, that is my friend. Hey, man, don't do that. And then I threw a bucket of ice on you.
Cool me down. I must have been so heated.
Well, I'm so proud of you. And I think you're one of the greatest human beings. I'm so glad we're friends. And you're
super
insightful.
Well, the feeling is a bazillion percent mutual. Golly. Really mutual. I like, no. Okay. No, I love
doesn't
you.
Doesn't sound very mutual.
I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
I looked out the window and my mind was like, oh, look, squirrel.
No. You're great. And you and I have really been like making it work and shifting together, like through the years, and how the music business has changed, and we're still like, you're super successful, I'm successful, like I'm proud of us, and I don't want people to think that we don't think we are successful, because we do think we are successful. We just, you and I have the same pursuit of, we want to be
goal driven.
Yeah, we're nobody. Very goal-driven.
I mean, I told you we're all in baseball right now, but like if Bryce Harper is going and taking BP twice a day every day, and he's Bryce Harper, like we can have like he has goals, and he's already at the big show, and you know, one of the greatest players in the game, but he's still working hard to get even more advanced.
Like, right.
This isn't a hobby. This isn't cruise control. This isn't like, oh, I want to grab a guitar and play some songs.
Yeah.
No, this is my life. This is, I guess, what God instilled in me as a child, and I just took me a while to find it. And we're making it work. I mean, I've got 4 boys, a wife, insurance, and mortgage,
right,
all because of music. I got to go on a cruise because of music. I got to play the Grand Ole Opry because of some dumb song I just thought up in my room and came out of my head. You know, I've been very, very blessed. I've been to Ireland, France, Italy, Mexico, Austin, May Pearl
RV with my Breeze dog.
RV. Like, it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
It is.
I've just learned to, you know, have more gratitude. And it took me a while to get there, because it was, and then it wasn't, and now it's back.
Yeah.
And
you've had that talk
okay.
with me. Like, you've had that talk with me about giving myself grace and
yeah, I read something last week, and I know this isn't true. This isn't a blanket statement for everybody, but it is for me, and it is for people who live in my house, that majority of anxiety is, it's self-inflicted of things you're worrying about that chances are won't ever happen. Chances are not going to happen.
Right.
And then a slim chance could happen. Worry about it when you get there. And that kind of hit me, because there'll be times, you know, Brooke will be like my dad had a lung scare about something. Brooke's like, you're not worried? I'm like, well, I'm worried, but I'll worry when we need to worry. Like, we'll get the test back, and if we need to, like, holy shit, then we'll holy shit. But I'm not going to have a preemptive holy shit and get myself worked up.
Yeah, stress and anxiety is so unhealthy, and we're finally finding that out.
Yeah, and something just spun coming out of that rut when I was being all negative, Nelly, that, you know what? And I know this, it's so simple, but it's like, I am so damn grateful for everybody who's in this building tonight, instead of just fucking worrying about who's not here and why there's not 600 people, why there's only 50. Well, god dang it, those 50 people are very important. Spent their hard-earned money and time and came to see me, and I can give you your money back, I give you your shirt back, I give you CD money back, but I can't give you your time back. And so when I relearned to just be grateful for that, it's like, all right, and I got 4 pretty kick-ass boys and a hot wife.
Yeah.
What am I bitching about?
Right.
And lovely, talented, hot friends.
Oh, gosh. Well, I was going to end right before that, but that seems like a good place to end. You, my friend, are a gem.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Kale. There's a chill in the air. I think you're leaving tonight. I think I could be wrong, but I know that I'm right. 'Cause when you